You're listening to Casual Swim.
You good to go?
Yep.
Okay, so UB40, thanks for talking to Casual Swim. Congrats on 40 years. Did you ever think you'd get to this point?
Nah, well, it's just, it's happened so quick. I'm not, because like basically, we've been working ever since we made our first record, signing off. And we've just like been continually like, you know, touring, making records. And it seems like crazy that it's actually 40 years now. It's not really quick, you know.
So I guess, what was it like when you first started, and how has the transition been from 40 years to now? Sorry, it's a huge question to start you off, but looking retrospectively, when you guys were first doing your thing, what was that like? And then, yeah, to transition to now, like, how has it evolved, and how have you guys evolved as people, and the world outside you evolved?
Well, when we started, basically our first record was like all our first compositions that we, you know, we wrote. There was like a few like you know, like covers on the album, but basically the first album was everything that we'd wrote. And we was doing like small gigs around England, and we basically got discovered by Chrissy Hines from The Pretenders. She took us on tour, and then by the time we finished her tour, our first single was like number 4 in the charts. And like I say, we've been touring and making records ever since, so it was a bit of a whirlwind like the beginning. So we was kind of learning in public still, because like obviously we were still learning our craft, you know, because it was all our first band, you know, like it was basically on the dole, and that gave us the time to like develop the band, etc. So like obviously now, moving forward now, like 40 years on, obviously we can play, you know, we know how to play now, we're like more relaxed, and yeah, we're still like doing new stuff. Like we've just finished a new LP, For the Many. Like I was just saying to you, we've done like a lot of collaborations with people all over the world, from like Jamaica to New Zealand. House of Shen,
yeah,
we've like collaborated on 3 different tracks,
yeah,
and it's all going to be coming out like over the next 6 months.
What do you think about the New Zealand dub scene? Like, do you know much about it, or do you guys rate it? Or
yeah, well, we've been going to New Zealand since we started the band, and you know, we've been inducted into the like the Maori. You know,
they love you guys. The whole country loves you guys.
It's like incredible. Like, you know, so like from when we first went there, all the young kids all had dreadlocks and that. It was all smoking weed and stuff. You know what I mean? And yeah, so like, everyone has like had a great time when we've gone to New Zealand. It's like a bit like going home, like, you know, like going to Jamaica or something like that.
It's real crazy, actually. So when you drive around the streets of East Auckland, you guys are huge in the Pacific Island community. Do you know that? Or?
Well, we've been to Tonga, with Samoa. We've been all over, you know, all over Polynesia. Yeah, like Hawaii, you know.
What is it about your music that you think connects you to that kind of, that type of person, you know?
Well, I think it's the heat, you know. Obviously, like, you know, reggae is like, you know, it comes from a, you know, hot climate. And I don't know, it's just like some, you know, similarities, like, because obviously, like I said, when we first started, like, obviously all the kids were like into Bob Marley.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of like New Zealand Rastas and that. And obviously, like, with the getting the land rights back and everything.
Yeah.
It was kind of all part of it, you know what I mean? It was all like, you know, it's like a big movement. So, it's like I say, it's like a home from home, really. Yeah.
Nice one. So, I guess you're talking about movements and society. How do you think UB40's music has played a wider role in culture, society and politics?
Well, I don't know about, I mean, obviously we just do our thing and like, you know, voiced our opinions on whatever's like bugging us at the time. Like this new LP is like, you know, there's all different subjects, political subjects, like there's you know, one about Donald Trump, there's one about the refugee crisis, you know, just like the disparity between rich and poor, like in England and, you know, around the world. You know,
yeah.
So like, there's a lot of subject matter, because like, obviously we've been going a long time and we've been like, you know, doing our thing. Like I say, you know, like voicing our opinions, but like the world's kind of gone back in time now. You know what I mean? It's even more crucial now than ever to speak up. Yeah.
So you guys obviously pro Corbyn.
Yeah. Well, obviously the name of the LP and everything's kind of a clue there. You know. So
yeah. So I guess like. What do you think about the political environment now in terms of Brexit happening and all that kind of carry on, and you guys being pro Corbyn, and we're in a crazy time at the moment in the UK, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Brexit thing, I mean, you know, I was always like pro European. Obviously, it wasn't like perfect, but, you know, I'd rather been in Europe than out of Europe. I've always been like, you know, pro international, you know. So, it's just like, I mean, the British government's just a joke. I mean, the whole thing is just like, you know, it's just like, it ain't going to go nowhere, really. I don't know what's going to happen, really. I don't think anybody else does. Everybody's just sick to death of hearing about it, and nothing's really been done. You know, it's just like the status quo.
What about race politics? Like, within those 40 years, let's take that as a timescale. Have you seen race kind of relations increase in the amount of favorability between people, or has it been more dispersed, or...
Yeah, that's a bit of a hard one. I mean, I think generally speaking, it's better. But obviously, with people like Donald Trump and that, that were just like, you know, directly like, you know, trying to, you know, put wedges between people. It's like I say, it's come to the forefront again, where we've kind of slipped back in time. I mean, when we started, we was like fighting the National Front, literally off the streets, you know, so they couldn't march. You know, we used to go to demonstrations and all that. And obviously, with Donald Trump, he's just like such a weirdo. And like such in us, his own little bubble in that. Obviously, he's got support, you know, a certain amount of support. But yeah, it's just like, it's really, like, yeah, it's really disappointing.
So for me, personally, being from New Zealand, I've got my blinders on when it comes to the social class system, because I'm foreign, so I don't understand it. But yeah, well, apparently it's a big thing in England.
Yeah, well, I mean, the class thing, I mean, like, you got your toughs. I mean, like I was saying about Brexit and, you know, like houses of parliament, it's all full of like, you know, most of it's like full of toughs who, you know, it's like they're all rich anyway, you know, that they can't relate to like, you know, like the regular man on the street because they've never been in that position, you know what I mean? Like, and I think with Brexit and everything, it's kind of showed them up as being like really lame and like, you know, it's just like an antiquated way of doing things. The whole system is just like kind of,
So I guess let's talk more about the music. So, growing up, what were the biggest creative influences that you guys had?
Well, me personally, it was like Bruce Lee, Bob Marley. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, just reggae in general, because obviously it was quite, you know, quite a political, you know, way of venting, you know, frustration through music. And yeah, I was always into kind of protest music, basically, from the civil rights thing, you know, Martin Luther King. Basically, grew, you know, obviously I was young then. We was all young, you know, growing up. Obviously, we was aware of what was going on at the time, you know. So,
yeah, that's a good answer. I guess, you guys, I was watching some stuff of you guys back in the day, and the fashion game was tight. Yeah. What was some of the, like, fashion stuff that you guys followed? What, like, can you tell us about that, the golden years, it's called them, and the fashion game? Like, what was inspiring you there?
Well, I mean, we would, you know, obviously being young, you just kind of latch onto the latest fashions, you know. Obviously, it's gone from like, yeah, when we was going to school, it was like flares, bell bottoms, you know what I mean? And then it went tight with like the skinhead movement.
Yeah.
And then it went big with the hip hop movement, like big baggy jeans.
So.
And now it's gone all skinny again now, you know what I mean? So like, yeah, what goes around comes around, basically in fashion.
So how were you guys received, I guess, being like a predominantly white reggae bands in a world of like punk and on that kind of vibe, like your lens on the world, were you conscious about what people thought about you, or was it like, fuck it, you didn't really care about that shit? Or,
well, we're just on our own thing. I mean, like, we all went to school, you know, school together, basically, you know, most of us met at school. So like, we was just like a bunch of mates, basically, and they just happen to be all different, you know, different colours and like from different backgrounds or whatever.
How was it for you personally, being a person of colour in a band that's, I guess, predominantly white? Like, what was that like?
Well, like I say, we was all friends and that. I mean, didn't really come into it, you know. I mean, we was all like, it was more about our politics, we're like in tune with each other. No, we're not really, no.
You're not?
No, it was like a... Yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like... Yeah.
People have that misconception because there was white guys...
Come over here.
It's not my interview. No, I'm just saying, it's like, you know, people had that misconception because there was white guys at the front of the band,
right,
you know. But the band were more mixed than you could imagine.
Really? Okay, so the media kind of construed it as being a white band. But
yeah,
guys,
but that's just them being like, you know, horrible stupid. Because, yeah, and a bit racist and that, and couldn't understand how, you know, all these people from different backgrounds could actually, like, form a band. But, I mean, we wasn't the first multiracial band anyway.
Should only black people play jazz as well?
Mm.
What's that, sorry?
Should only black people play jazz too, because that's American black music. Mm. Should only black people play blues, you know?
Mm.
It's just pathetic stance to take, really. Yeah.
Particularly seeing as what we're talking about is a style of music that came from Jamaica that was adopted by all kinds of people around the world. So it's no more or less relevant for somebody from New Zealand, a Maori, to be adopting reggae than it is from anybody white, you know. It's an adoption of music.
But what about when you got the Jobsons, you know, when you've got white brothers from Jamaica who tart like that, you know what I mean? Yeah, and they've got a reggae band, are they all right? Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just silly to talk about music belonging to anybody.
Yeah. Okay, it's a really good answer. How did you guys find your voice initially? Like now it's a classic and legendary voice. But like when you guys were first starting, how did you find your lens on the world? Like how did that come about?
Well, like I said, we just basically wrote about stuff that we personally found, you know, that kind of inspired us to write a tune. Like, you know, whether he was like pissed off about it. Or maybe a love song, like, you know, sometimes we do like covers and stuff. Obviously, we've done all albums that have been covers.
Yeah.
But that was just showing another side of the band, you know what I mean? Because, like, when we first started, a lot of people used to say, oh, it's them, like, being moaning about politics or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So, like, the kind of Labour love stuff was kind of a counteraction to that. So,
yeah.
Basically, our influence is where we got our love for reggae from, by doing all these old tunes, like,
So I guess if you look at the pop charts at the moment, it's all like with some caveats, like a formulaic kind of structure. What did you guys, when you guys came on the scene, that was like something very new to the pop scene, or what was it like to be a part of that movement that was like so different to anything else? Who were you guys coming up with? Like who was in the charts with you guys?
Well, it was like the punk scene. So like everybody was in a band basically, especially where we came from. But like, I mean, it encouraged me personally because we used to go and see loads of bands, and like, obviously, like some of the bands are like really crap. Do you know what I mean? So that's why we decided, well, why don't we have a bash? You know, we'll have a go at it and see what happens. And like, obviously, we did, and here we are now.
40 years later, sold out show at the Roundhouse in London.
But obviously, we kind of stumbled into it and just like. Yeah, and it just like kind of worked out. Yeah,
that's a pretty modest answer, but yeah, nice stuff. So I guess talking about passing on your knowledge to the next generation, what advice have you been given that has resonated with you through? Like if you were sitting in Hackney right now and there was a young music producer who was making tunes on a MPC, what advice would you give that person?
Well, just go out and do your thing and, you know, love what you do. And, like, yeah, just express yourself and hopefully, you know, things will work out for you and you can make a living out of it, you know.
So
just do it for the joy of it, basically. Yeah, and don't think about, like, the commercial, you know, the commercial side or, you know, I might be a millionaire or, you know, I might be like Rihanna or, like, Jay-Z or whatever, yeah.
Mm. Does music have a therapeutic and, like, I don't know, does it have anything to do with your mental well-being?
Yeah, I think it is cathartic. I mean, like, you know, to be able to, like, vent your frustrations out in a song that you've got to, like, form and, like, you know, obviously it takes a bit of time. It's very seldom it comes out and, like, it comes out straight away. You know, you have to develop it and work it. And, like, yeah, like, I do, like, kind of love that process, you know, from the lyrics to you know, the arrangement and, like, yeah, obviously the technology that it takes to put it all together, yeah.
What do you think about... I've only got a couple more, sorry, it's all good. What do you think about the...
A couple more minutes.
Okay, what do you think about the music game now in terms of algorithms selecting what you should listen to? Like, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just the way of the world, isn't it? It's just the way things are going. I've been... I mean, me, I've kind of been through... that, you know, like the Facebook thing and that, and I kind of got bored with it, tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, I don't really go on Facebook that much, and obviously...
No, I'm talking more about Spotify.
Yeah. Well, Spotify. Don't even talk to me about Spotify.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, like, yeah, it's totally changed now. I mean, yeah, Spotify, for instance. I actually met the guy who started Spotify, like, years ago, because I've got, like, a label that does, like, dubstep and that. And, yeah, but I mean, it's kind of unfair to the artists because they only get like a sixth of a P.
Yeah, definitely.
For like each.
But what about from a consumer's perspective? Like, if you're listening to music via, back in the day it was like radio digging, and now it's just there's playlists being selected to you by the data that you leave behind because of your traces of music, you know?
Yeah. I mean, well, I think the music business is even more controlled now than what it's ever been. Like the commercial side, you know, like the pop world, because like basically it's all like about 10 writers who write all the songs for all the major artists like Rihanna and all that. It's all like, you know what I mean, it's all like it's even more controlled in a way, but then again it's freer because of the internet and you can get discovered on the internet.
So conscious of time, this is quite a somber question, but I ask a lot of people this. How would you want UB40's music to be remembered in its place in society?
That's a hard one, that is. I mean, we've done some good work basically, and maybe made a few people think about certain things, and mainly just stuck, you know, to enjoy the music basically, and the vibe.
Do you have an answer for that?
If we get remembered at all, it would be it would be amazing. Pop music in general is very
fickle, isn't it?
Ephemeral, you know, it doesn't last very long. But if it's remembered at all, that'll be an achievement.
Amazing. And you guys are excited about the future in terms of producing more tunes and gigging?
Well, I mean, we're excited about obviously going out on the road and doing, you know, promoting this new album. Obviously, that's the latest thing. We've only just started promoting it. And, like, yeah, we're kind of looking forward to, like, kind of building it up and, spreading
well,
it.
Well, your energy is exciting, and it's that just your zest for life. It's a really good thing. Thanks for talking to Casual Swim. Peace.
Yeah, man. No problem. Wicked. Cheers, brother.